Harav Professor Avram Steinberg is a scientist, a physician, director of the Medical Ethics Unit at Shari Tzedek Medical Center, and the co-chair of Israel's National Council on Bioethics. He's also the chairman of the Encyclopedia Talmudit, celebrating its 75th anniversary, and a recipient of the Israel Prize. Professor Steinberg.
It's an opportunity to again thank the Rosh Yeshiva for supporting the Talmudic Encyclopedia for many years, and especially now that you came here for Yeshiva University, but also for the event that we had, the 75th anniversary of the Talmud Encyclopedia, and really a guest of honor, and we thank you very much for your ongoing support. Thank you. This is the Talmud Encyclopedia up to volume Membet, but actually last week volume Memches came out already, so it's going more rapidly than I can update my presentations. The topic that I'm going to cover in a very broad manner, without going into every detail, are all kinds of reproductive technologies, what they are, and what it comes from a halachic point of view. So everyone wants to have children, wants to have nice children, smart children, and particularly healthy children. And it doesn't matter what the culture is, what the color is, everyone wants to be a parent, a mother or a father, but not everyone can, because there are many issues of infertility. Just on a humoristic way, doesn't work. Oh. There's a meeting between a Nobel Prize laureate, Anatole France, and a beautiful dancer by the name of Isadora Duncan in 1923. Duncan, the dancer, says, "Just imagine a child with my beauty and your brains." Says France, "Yes, but imagine a child with my beauty and your brains." So not always are the shiduchim coming out the way everyone wants. So the infertility issue is a worldwide problem. There are over 100 million couples at any given time that have fertility problems throughout the world. Some are because of male factors, others because of female factors, and some because of many factors. And we know that fertility is a blessing and infertility is a curse. A woman that doesn't have children is, like Rachel said, "Give me children, otherwise I am dead." There is a feeling of loss without having children, and it's not only on the woman's side, it's also on the man's side. A childless man, an ariri, is as if he is dead, again, from a psychological point of view. And actually, the first biblical commandment of the Taryag Mitzvot is be fruitful and multiply. So it's not only a psychological, a worldwide feeling, but it's actually the first mitzvah of Taryag Mitzvahs. And we know that our foremothers, many of them were barren women. Finally, all of them had children, but Chazal say that those many of our ancestors were barren because HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires the prayers of the righteous. So indeed, they are praying, but the fact is that the life is difficult if you can't have children. Now, in general, we divide the intervention in fertility issues into two major types of interventions. One is planning the family. On the one hand, reducing the size of the family, like using contraceptives and abortion, as we just now heard the halachic approach to it, or to enlarge the family when otherwise, in natural ways, it is impossible by using artificial insemination, in vitro insemination, and so on. Programming, which I won't talk about, is not only having children, but having normal children. And therefore, we can use PGD, stem cell engineering, and genetic therapy. This is a part that we are not going to talk about. So one question is, are we allowed to treat infertility altogether? One of the problems is that in order to treat infertility, sometimes the man has to emit semen for testing, for using it to fertilize eggs outside the womb. Is there an issue of emitting semen for not? But the overall halachic approach is that to help a couple from its mental anguish, not being able to have a child, is a meritorious act, and therefore it is permissible, and actually emitting semen is not for naught, it is for the same purpose as having a normal intercourse, and therefore halachically, at least after the first generation where there were such discussions, whether it's at all permissible, currently all, certainly most poskim don't see a problem in emitting semen for the purpose of procreation, which is what is done in a natural way. So that is really not an issue. There are some ethical issues involved in this type of intervention, some of which I'll describe in a few minutes. So on the one hand, science and technology per se are morally neutral. The fact that we can do a treatment that will enable an infertile couple to have a child by ways that a few generations ago not only wasn't it feasible, but it wasn't even imaginable that things that we are doing today can be done. But the fact that we're doing it is morally neutral. That's a scientific fact. The question is, from a social moral point of view, is the use of this type of science and technology, and from our point of view, from the halachic point of view, is it a permissible act or are there prohibitions from a halachic point of view? So the technology by itself can be neutral, but the use of it may have problems. And actually there are two wide problems in all these new technologies. One is quote-unquote playing God, and the other one is interference with nature. So the concept of playing God, I put it in parentheses, is not a Jewish concept. No one can play God. God, in essence, is an entity or whatever we can call it that can do something from nothing. No human being ever before and in the future can do something from nothing. All we do in all the technologies and the innovations is a technical matter rather than a fundamental, and actually it is using what is existing and revealing the existing nature, but not creating something new. So by enhancing the knowledge, actually, if you look at it with open eyes, it is a way to enhance the belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because when we see a plan, there must have been a planner. We know it from everybody's experience on a daily life that whenever there is a plan, someone planned it. This building didn't come up by itself, someone planned it. So the more we know, the more we reveal, the more we understand that there is an Almighty that does all of it, but that is not a way that we can play God, so to speak. The more questionable issue is, are we allowed to interfere with nature in such a significant way? And the answer is that certainly it's permissible, but perhaps even required. I won't go into so many sources to point to the fact that we are allowed to intervene in nature, but I'll give you just two, three examples. The Pasuk says, "Verapo yerape," and heal, he should heal. Says the Gemara in Bava Kamma, from here, one derives a healer's permission to heal. And the obvious question is, why does a physician need a permission to be a physician? We don't find a permission to be a carpenter or a permission to be a shoemaker. Why does a physician need to get a permission? Says Rashi, because we do not say God smites and man heals. Kodesh Baruch Hu machi ve'ihu masi. We could have thought that a physician is interfering with God's providence. God wanted this person to be sick. God wanted this person to be disabled. God wanted this person to be injured. Who are you, human being, that you interfere in nature and you heal this person? So the Hava Amina was that a human being shouldn't be allowed to do it. And in fact, in Chazal's day, there was a whole movement called the Isim, from the term Asya. Asya is a physician, who said that a physician is not permitted to interfere with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wish or act in the way. Says the Torah, V'rapo yerape, you are allowed to heal the person. Why? Because you are partner to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're not going against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the person to be sick. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you the intelligence and the means, and you can do it as a shaliach for the Kodesh Baruch Hu to heal this person. And in fact, if you will be successful or not, is dependent on Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's not that you are the big hero that you do it. It all depends on Kodesh Baruch Hu, but it is not regarded as a prohibited interference with nature. At the end of Vayechulu, it says, Asher bara Elokim la'asot, says the Medrash, if the acts of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the sixth day of creation was finished, was completed, should have said, Asher bara Elokim ve'asa. He did and he completed. La'asot means to be continued, to be done further on. And therefore, who is doing it further on? Human beings. And in fact, all what we see around us is interference in nature. This building wasn't here built by HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the 6 days of creation. This is a human act that created this place, and therefore there's no reason to feel bad about interfering with nature. So as I said, in planning infertility situations, we can use either artificial insemination or in vitro fertilization. Today we can even transplant testicles and ovaries and uteruses. And the question is if this interference is halachically permissible. In principle, it is permissible because infertility is a curse. Infertility is a terrible situation. And if we can treat it, we should treat it. But are there halachic prohibitions to do so? When we talk about artificial insemination, where do we get the semen in order to inseminate when there is a problem? So we can get it from the husband to his wife. We can get it from a donor to a single woman. We can get it from a donor to a married woman. We can get it from an anonymous source, such as a bank of semen that we don't know. And also, it can be a Jewish donor or a Gentile donor, and it can be taken while the donor is still alive, but also taken after he died. And all these create specific questions that have been dealt. So if the source is the husband, so why do we need to do artificial insemination between a couple, between a husband and a wife? So there might be anatomic disturbances on the male's organs, so he cannot do it naturally. There can be functional disturbances of the sperm. The sperm isn't good enough, and therefore it can't impregnate. And there's a whole host of reasons why, despite the fact that there is a couple, the male factor is the cause for the infertility. So, what are the halachic considerations here? Interestingly, that the first source in history, in human history, that insemination or impregnation can happen without a direct relationship between a man and a woman is already in a Gemara. And all the historians of medicine quote this as a idea that already Chazal foresaw such an option. And the sugya in Chagiga has to do with a Kohen Godel that, as we know, is allowed to marry only a virgin woman, as opposed to a regular Kohen that is forbidden to marry a Grusha, but he is allowed to marry an Almana, who is not a virgin anymore, but a Kohen Gadol is allowed to marry only a Betzula, only a virgin woman. So the question is, Betula she'ibra ma'u le'Kohen Gadol? If you have a pregnant woman that is a virgin, is she allowed to Kohen Gadol? How could a virgin become pregnant? And the answer is, Chayshin an shema ba'ambati ibra. In those days, there weren't showers in homes. There were public bathhouses. And one after the other went into this bathhouse. And the chashash is that a male came to bath in this bathhouse, and a woman followed him, and she became impregnant by artificial insemination, by the semen of the man that entered into her body without a direct relationship. This concept, until a hundred or less years, was unimaginable that it can happen, and today it happens. I won't go into the whole sugya and into the question whether it practically could have happened, but the idea was already there. So, the rule from a halachic point of view is that a Jewish sperm donor is the father by definition, no matter how it happened. Whether he is a legitimate husband of his wife, whether he is another Jew that had relations with a married woman and the child is a mamzer, yet he is the father because the sperm came from him. And therefore, no matter where the sperm comes from, if it is a Jewish donor, he, by definition, is the father of this child. So, therefore, if we are talking about a husband, even though the sperm didn't come directly in a direct relationship between husband and wife, but came via artificial insemination from his semen, he will be the father, despite the fact that it didn't happen in a natural way. Now, sometimes we use a freezing of sperm prior to the relationship and even prior to marriage. And that is in case where, let's say, a young person has to undergo chemotherapy or radiotherapy because he has a malignancy. So we know that these treatments cause sterility to the male. In order for him to be able to have children if he survives his disease, we can take his sperm prior to the treatment, freeze it, give him the treatment, and hopefully after the treatment he will survive, and either he's already married or he will get married, we can use his frozen sperm in order to fertilize his wife, and the child will be his, despite the fact that now he is unable to do it naturally. Now, if the donor is someone other than the husband, then it can happen, for instance, if the husband have no sperm at all, or there is a genetic disease and we don't want to let him go, that will depend who this foreign donor to the couple is. Is it a Jew or is it a Gentile? If it is a Jew, then there is a question of mamzerus, because the woman is married and the sperm comes from a Jew other than her husband. But because it's not done in the natural way, there's a machloikes whether this causes mamzerus. So there are some shittes who hold that it doesn't matter where this foreign sperm came from, the child will be a mamzer. The ashit is that it has to be only in direct relationship, otherwise there is no mamzerus, and there is a shita that he is a suffolk mamzer, which we don't know if this is a form that creates mamzerus. There might be also other questions, such as shema yisa'ach et achoto. If this sperm donor, Jewish sperm donor, has his own children with his wife, and he donated his sperm to another Jewish couple, and he disappears. And now he has a daughter, and from his sperm to the couple, a boy was born. They may meet, and they are actually brother-sister from a father's side, which is a brother-sister relationship, and their children certainly will be regarded as mamzerim. So Shema Yisach Esachoyso is a concern in this situation. There might also be a situation where the sperm donor is not a Kohen, whereas the husband of the wife, who is not the father of the child, is a Kohen, and when he goes to shul with the son of the couple, everyone assumes it's his son, so everyone might assume that he is also a Kohen. And then if he dochens, it's a brocha levatola, and so on. So these are questions that come up, and therefore, certainly halachically, a Jewish sperm donor is not allowed at all to be considered. It is different if we are talking about a Gentile donor, because a father, halachically, if he is a Gentile, has no yachas to his children, so there is certainly no mamzerus. There is also no chsha shema yisach et achoto, even though biologically he is the father of his daughters and the father of the son that was born from his sperm. Halachically, they are not brothers and sisters, and therefore halachically, that is an option that a Gentile donor can help in a case where the husband has no sperm or there's other problems. Some hesitate because we don't want to introduce foreign DNA into our nation, but that is more a conceptual fear rather than a pure halachic consideration, and therefore that can be regarded at least. Now, interestingly, there may be situations where the father, the owner of the sperm, is not alive anymore, and yet after his death, a child is born. For instance, the example I gave earlier, a young man who is married and has now cancer, and he froze his sperm, he underwent chemotherapy or radiotherapy, and he died. He didn't survive the disease. Now we have in the bank his frozen semen, which we can inseminate to his wife. And the child will be born after the father was long dead. Is there a father-child relationship in such a condition? It's a machloikis today, especially in writing, between Avshalom Zalman Neuerbach and Arav Yisraeli. Again, I don't want to go into all the details of it, but currently I think that most poskim would say that he is the father, for instance, for inheritance or for other father functions as such. About Yibum Chalitza, there is a big discussion whether the woman would need Yibum Chalitza despite the fact that he is a child. But a more complicated situation would be if a male died and he didn't even leave sperm frozen. And we still, within 24 hours after he died, we are able to obtain his semen. And we can take this semen and inseminate it to a woman. Not only will the male father, potential father, not be in the world when the child will be born, but even his semen wasn't in the world before he died. And yet, we use his semen and we have a child. Is this a father-child relationship? Complicated situations, we face it from time to time. Isn't the semen obligated to be pure? Can't hear? Zera lo chayav kura. No? There is a question whether there is a nivula mes by doing the procedure, but if it's for his benefit, probably it won't be such a thing. I'll just skip a little bit into the IVF in vitro fertilization situation. So again here, there may be many sources for the egg or the womb of a woman that can't have children, either because she has no ovaries or because she has no womb. And it can be the husband's sperm with the wife's egg, and yet we need to do an in vitro fertilization procedure because, for instance, the fallopian tubes of the mother are blocked, and therefore the egg from the ovary can't meet the sperm that comes from the other side because they meet in the fallopian tube, and that is blocked. So we have to take out the egg from the woman, take out the sperm from her husband, fertilize it in the lab, and bring it back into the womb in order for a child to be born. And obviously, that is halachically sanctioned because it's all within the couple. But sometimes we need a donor of a womb, which is called a surrogate mother, because let's say the woman of the couple underwent hysterectomy and she has no womb. So although she has eggs, but she can't carry the pregnancy, or vice versa, she has no ovaries and she can carry the pregnancy, but she has no eggs. So we need an egg donor. In these situations, the major question that comes up is who is the mother in such a situation? In other words, to be a mother, a woman has to fulfill two functions, as opposed to the male, that to be a father, he has to fulfill only one act, meaning that a male to become a father has to donate the 50% of the genetic material which will create the fetus, which is his sperm. So he can give his sperm, go away for 9 months, come back, and Moshe Groys is the father. He didn't have to do anything between this act and the other. Whereas the woman, in order to be a mother, has two functions. She has to give the other 50% of the genetic material, which is the egg, but she has to carry the pregnancy into the delivery. Now, if we separate the two functions of a woman as a mother, one is giving the genetic material, donating the egg, and one is giving the womb, carrying the pregnancy and delivering, who of the two is the mother? And that is very debatable nowadays. On the one hand, we could argue that the genetic mother, the egg donor, is the mother because biologically the genes are what makes us as human beings. And the uterus, we can look at it just as an incubator, just as a place where the baby is growing, but really not connected to motherhood, so the egg donor should be the mother. Halachically, there are all kinds of support to this idea. I won't go into it. So this is one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is to say that the gestational mother is the mother because the bonding between the mother and the child occurs while the baby is growing in her uterus. We know today by epigenetic that the environment is as important or sometimes less or sometimes even more than the genetic material. So the environment where the baby is growing is the motherhood, and the egg can be a chip or something unrelated, although it's genetically important. What?
It's a partnership.
Partnership between the two women. Okay, we'll come to it in a minute. But that's another option. But this option is to say that only the gestational mother is the mother, and there are all kinds of sources to support this opinion. And indeed, when this technology came about, all the rabbonim that I know argued one to this side, one to that side, and everyone tried to bring a raya. I had the opportunity to discuss this matter, like many others, with the Pshlom Zalman Neuerbach, and we went over all the rayas, all the sources that all the other rabbonim brought, and he brought some others as well, and he decided that neither is applicable to this situation. There was never a situation where there was a separation between the two functions of motherhood into two different women. There were situations where technically within the same mother there was a change, like she was goyete when she started the pregnancy and then she underwent giyur and she became Jewish. So the question is there chalitza and yibum? Is there eishes ach? And all kinds of such questions. But these are within the same person. But to have two separate persons, each with a separate function, he said that according to his opinion, there is no precedence in halacha, and we can't solve the problem. Now, what do you do when you can't solve a problem? It's like many teikus in Shas, that even the Tanoim D'Amorim couldn't solve certain problems, and they left a teiku. But lehalacha, we have rules. When there is a teiku, what do you do? Is it a Doraisa, you go lechumra? Is it a Rabbonon, you go lekula? And various halachic procedures. And therefore, his opinion was that the mother, that both are mothers lechumra. Misofek. We don't know if the egg donor is the mother, we don't know if the surrogate mother is the mother, and therefore we take both women as mothers lechumra. And there are many nafkeminis why, what happens if both are mothers lechumra. For instance, if either of the two women is not Jewish, the child will need a giyur, because maybe the non-Jewish part, either the egg donor or the surrogate, if she is non-Jewish, is the mother, and therefore the child is not Jewish, so he needs a giyur. A child will not be able to marry siblings from either woman, because maybe this is his mother, and therefore this is his half-sister, or maybe this is his mother, and so on. The child will not be able to heir, to get the Yerusha from either woman, because every child of a woman will say, how do you know that this is your mother? Maybe the other one is your mother, and you can't get the money, the monetary compensation from this woman. And so on. There are a lot of nafkeminos in this case, and we... No, Pidyon, yeah. So Pidyon HaBen has really nothing to do with who is the mother, except that if we call the mother that even is an egg donor, but she didn't deliver, there's no Pidyon HaBen on her side. So therefore we can't use her as a mother for Pidyon HaBen. So that's in a negative way. Incidentally, when we do a giyur on a child of this kind, what brocha do we make at the time that we make the milah? If it is a Jewish child, then the brocha is ala milah, and lachniso bevriso shel Avraham Avinu. If it is l'shem giyur, then the brocha is lamul esageirim, and there is no lachniso bevriso shel Avraham Avinu. So what brocha do you make? Think about it. So I think that there are a lot of other issues involved in infertility treatments. There are a lot of shilas that come up. There are newer things that time is late. I don't want to go into it. I just wanted to give you a brief overview of the many questions that the treatment for infertility creates. But despite all the questions, if we have such a treatment and we can help a couple, we should do it and try to solve the problems. It's the problems of the rabbonim, not of the couple. The couple should have the benefit of having a treatment to their infertility, and we have to find the right solutions. Thank you.
Please, if you have any questions, to direct them to who you'd like to direct the questions to.
Does it matter now that with modern science we could analyze the baby a little differently and we could perhaps determine that it's more viable for the 9th month, like against the peristalsis?
question was that today the baby is viable before the beginning of the ninth month. I don't know, is that only with an incubator or even without? You need an incubator. So that's like artificially you're keeping him alive. But on his own, he's not the Bar Kayama yet. So I think the idea that the Torah's Chesed brought up is still valid, still correct. Before the beginning of the ninth month, it's like Kol Olah Chadoshav. When you put an incubator, it's like putting him back into the mother's body. Still the same.
Yichud questions came up in adoption. There's no relationship between the adopting mother or father and the son or the daughter that they adopted. There are very heavy questions about it. But as long as it is a father or a mother, then there's no Yichud. Now, if the father is only the husband and he is not the sperm giver, the sperm came from another one, indeed, it's the same like in adoption. It's the same shaila.
The sperm is from the father, the egg is from the mother. Because of that condition, it goes into a surrogate. What role does the surrogate mother play in the parents?
Well, again, if I understood, the question is, if you get a sperm donation and an egg donation, and you take this and you put it in a surrogate woman, what is the relationship to the couple? No relationship. They didn't contribute anything. They just bought sperm, they bought egg, and they bought, so to speak, a womb. They have nothing to do with this child. They can raise it, but halachically and legally, they have no relationship.
No, but if they're the parents of the baby, in other words,
the husband.
They could not, because of medical issues, or maybe she's missing a potential womb, and they hire a surrogate mother.
No, but what did they give? The parents, what did they give?
Both the sperm and the
egg. So that's a regular surrogacy situation. Yeah, so I said that maybe the surrogate woman is the mother despite the fact that the egg and the sperm came from the couple. Or maybe that since the egg came from the couple, she is the real mother. So that is the suffix. So we look at both as being mothers, lechumra. Right. Now, it's important to realize it because it's very important to know who these women are. With a surrogate mother, it's usually easier because if a couple, let's say the woman from the couple doesn't have a uterus and they need another woman to carry the pregnancy, but she has an egg and her husband has sperm. Usually they know who the surrogate woman was. And they should be careful that after 18 years, they shouldn't get married, the two offspring. But egg donors are not always known. In fact, in many instances, they are not known. They just buy it. Some buy it on the internet. They just pay and buy eggs. And that creates a problem, Shema Yisa'ach et Achoto, if the donor of the egg is the Jewish woman. And the same, by the way, is true for the sperm. Incidentally, in Israel, the sperm banks are totally anonymous. No one is allowed to know who the sperm comes from. And at a certain time, a few years ago, let's say, a student wanted to make money, so he went and donated many, many times sperms, and there could have been 100 children that were his children. And statistically, with so many, could have been a situation that a brother would marry a sister. So in order to reduce this, which is not only a halachic problem, it's also a medical problem, because diseases come within families. So now the law in the country is that a man is allowed to donate only 10 samples, and there's a central registry, so he can't come to Hadassah and donate 10 times, and go to Rambam and again donate 10 times, and go to Soroka and donate another 10 times. Because there's a central registry, he can donate only 10 times. From these 10 can be many. I mean, it's not that it goes all to one, but still it's not a number that in 9 million people, the chance to meet half a brother or sister are very, very minimal. So that's the best we can do today. Unmarried or a single woman, again, purely halachically speaking, there is no issue, because there is no mamzerus when she is not a married woman, and therefore the child is a legitimate child. But we don't like to encourage such a situation, because it's really raising, as a single mother, raising a child without a father figure. Today, with the new concepts of families, this has become sort of normative, but from our perspective, it's not to be encouraged. But there are women who try their best. They got to an age where they can't have any more children, so before it happens, they want to have a child, so they take sperm and they have a child at the last minute when the clock is ticking. Another option for them is to freeze eggs, their own eggs, which gives them many, many more years the option to become pregnant with their own eggs and with the sperm of a husband and not as a single woman. And that's really recommended.
And why shouldn't it be conscious that the sperm she gets from that sperm bank belongs to a mother? If a single woman, if they sperm from
a time. What? Well, mamzer in the general population is very, very rare. So, yeah, no.